Our title is Happy Families. I'd like to start by touching on some of the problems facing anyone talking about happy families, and the drama highlighted quite a few of them. Then I'd like us to just look at three snapshots of Jesus' family life that in fact you have in front of you on the service sheet. Three snapshots from Jesus' family album. And then finally, we're going to close with perhaps the most hopeful words ever spoken in relation to family life. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to start with the problems. We're going to have a look at three snapshots from Jesus' family album and close with perhaps the most hopeful words ever spoken about family life. But in order to get there, I'd like to go back to the beginning of January, because I had a strange experience at the beginning of January. I actually discovered I was preaching on this subject then. And I was undergoing this very strange experience. People around me had changed. Previously healthy, optimistic people were looking desperate. This is early January. And I'll say to them, I saw you before Christmas. You were fine. I mean, what's happened? Have you been struck by a particularly virulent form of the plague? Have you been lowered into a vat of boiling oil? Have you been run over by a large and very fast-moving juggernaut? And the reply would come, no, I've spent 4 days with my family. But tonight, see, we're thinking about happy families. Of course we are. But if you do go into a bookshop, I mean, there are problems here, because if you do go into a bookshop and you look at the books on families by eminent family therapists, they're all called things like Families and How to Survive Them, or How to Be Human Despite Your Mum and Dad, or Family and Self-Hate. But of course, our subject tonight is happy families. Is that a real possibility? At a time when the classic mum, dad, and dependent children sort of back of cornflake packet family is actually less than two fifths of the households in this country. So the classic mum, dad, dependent children, cornflake packet model is less than two-fifths of the families of homes in this country. And of course, a lot of what goes on in those two-fifths of families wouldn't sit very happily on the back of a cornflake packet. Happy families. Or should it be disintegrating families? Well, it is in many ways, because we shouldn't be surprised, because look at the burden of expectation that the family has to carry. Terrifying expectations, really, when you just think about them. Families basically are asylums, aren't they? And mine is, you know, the family's an asylum. Asylums for all our kinks and tangles. Families are asked to cope with laughter, despair, sex, and I link the three together, routine, children, the marriage relationship, sound or struggling, economic ups and downs, bereavement, in-laws, growing pains, generation gaps, change, etc., etc. That's what families are asked to cope with, and we're thrown into them with no training. Happy families. Well, that would be a miracle, wouldn't it? Happy families. I mean, I'm terrible at home. I can fool you here in a pulpit, but I'm terrible at home. You probably think I'm terrible here, but I'm not even worse at home. You know, I can't, if I, If I can't get my way in the world, if I can't get my way at work, and I often can't, I'm frustrated and I'm thwarted, and I'm feeling rather small and powerless. So I get home and I meet the children. And here is my big break. Because here I can be big and powerful. It's sweet. They both still think I'm tall. And So here I can be big and powerful, and so I just shout them, say, look, just do what you're told, will you? I wonder if your home was a place of justice, or whether it was just a place of lots of scapegoats for what was going wrong in the world outside. Happy families. But you go into some Christian bookshops, and you look under families, and you find books of a different sort from this tidal wave of gloom. The books tend to have covers featuring a young mum with flowing golden hair and a flowery skirt. Actually, rather like Sue's, I was. And standing in a cornfield, she's standing in a cornfield. And she's playfully sort of playing with this golden-haired child, accompanied by blonde, tanned dad, wearing a lumberjack shirt and flared trousers. So, so this is obviously a reprint. And he's got a sincere smile on his face. And I think, yes, this is it. Perhaps if me and my family, if we move nearer a cornfield, the family would be happier. I could buy my wife a flowery dress, and she could grow her hair. And I mean, well, I'm never going to have a body like that man's, but at least I could get the shirt. And perhaps we could start all over again. Yeah, it's the cornfield. We need the cornfield. But, of course, the problem is deeper than that, because the problem is in me. And I can't move away from myself, however near a cornfield I may be. And I can't change myself by changing my shirt or changing my hair. Happy families. Well, really, given that, some hope, eh? And you might think, well, that's rather a problem-centred, negative sort of opening. And I'm sometimes gently accused of being a bit negative. And I am, really, but I'm only extraordinarily negative sometimes, because I'm extraordinarily hopeful. And I'm only extremely destructive sometimes because I'm extremely optimistic. I actually think it's worth clearing the ground. I actually think it's worth being realistic, however uncomfortable that is. Because I believe that once the ground is cleared and once reality is faced, something really beautiful can grow. I believe in beautiful flowers, and therefore I believe in sharp-edged scythes. And certainly that is true concerning families. I can't speak for you, but certainly for me, I've had a lot of sand thrown in my eyes, and it hasn't helped me. It reminds me of the parish finance committee. The chairman says, well, after looking at the church accounts, I do believe that we had a lot of sand thrown in our eyes at the last meeting. Tonight, we're definitely looking for something more concrete. And, tonight, hopefully, there will be no sand and no concrete, just clarity. And when you want clarity, you turn to Jesus. And so now let's turn, in a sense, from the problems and begin to reflect on some of the solutions. And this is where you may want to have that service sheet with you. Because we're going to look now, very briefly, at three snapshots from Jesus' family album. And the first one is family's history. The second is family as transition. And the third, family as support. So let's start with the first one, Mark 6, 1-3. Family as history. So here we have Jesus, hometown. He's showing great depth of insight. He's performing miracles. The people are amazed. But one line which is missing, which should be there on your bit of paper, is what happened next. They're impressed with him, they're amazed by him, but they take offense at him because they know his family. They can't cope with the fact that they know his family. And I think this is amazing. What a reason to reject someone. And Jesus probably wanted to say, look, forget my family, forget where I came from, just listen to me now. But he couldn't. He couldn't escape his family history. They wouldn't let him. And in fact, it thwarted him and it held him back. And he found, if you read on in Mark 6, he found he couldn't perform any miracles there, or only a few. So he may have left his home behind when he began his public ministry, but he didn't leave his family history behind. And so in a sense, it's not surprising that I find it very hard. I left home at 17, and I became a Christian when I was 20. But it really was only when I was about 25, 26, 27 that I began to disentangle home from God. Now, I'm a slow developer, I know, but I wonder if you've had that problem as well. You see, previous to that, I'd read the Bible, I'd devotedly attended Christian gatherings, I'd been to prayer breakfasts even. So that must have been some while ago. But before that, my God did tend to look a lot like, almost like a composite picture of my mum and dad. A slightly sort of nice version, but basically a composite picture of my mum and dad. You know, I instinctively felt that God thought the same way as they did, really. That basically they'd got it right. And that God felt strongly about the same sort of sins that they felt strongly about. And that he had the same set of foibles, etc., etc. You know, I'm not sure that I ever thought that God supported the same football team as my mum, but then the team in question was Spurs, so that wouldn't be very likely anyway, would it? But now I love my mum and dad. I love my mum and dad, and I stand in great debt to them. But there was no way this situation was healthy. It was natural enough. It's natural enough, but not healthy. You see, in Jesus' story, family history produced skepticism in those round about him. Well, in my story, family history induced skepticism in me. Because really, what I became to realize after 6, 7, 8 years of believing was that my God wasn't big enough. He wasn't other enough. He wasn't loving enough, either for my needs or for those of the world. And so there needed to be a lot of disentangling between home and God. And it was a bit frightening, to be honest. It is a bit frightening to do that. But it's very important. I was a new creation, yes. But I was a new creation with a family history. I was born again, yes. But I was born again with a family history. I'm a child of God. But I'm a child of God with a family history. And it needed, and it continues to need, facing. And of course, you have a family history. I mean, if you're famous, of course, the tabloids will research it for you, free of charge. But famous or not, you do have one, and it's a very significant one. Because yours, I can tell you just by looking at you, wasn't a normal family. Because there's no such thing as a normal family. Your family was and is a very distinctive one, giving you all sorts of messages for when you were young and deeply receptive, and continuing to give you messages now. So perhaps the start, and it is only a start, but perhaps the start of happy families is to acknowledge your family history. Just acknowledge that it's there. And crucially, acknowledge it in God's presence. Just sit there with God and acknowledge your family history. And begin to bring to God old family memories. Happy, sad, puzzling, terrifying, painful, brilliant. And say to God, this is my history. This is my family history. You had a history when you came to earth. This is my family history. What's it done to me? What's it doing to me? And what shall I do with it? Jesus was acutely aware of the power of family history. But he wasn't crippled by it. He was thwarted by it, but he wasn't crippled by it. And we needn't be either, if only we'll bring it to God. Family as history. And so we move on to family as transition, which is Luke chapter 8, 19 to 21. And you'll remember it because June read all these to us. This passage takes me immediately to Clapham Junction. Clapham Junction, I don't need to tell you, is an extremely important place. Why? Because it's helping people to go somewhere else. Yes? Does that make sense? You know, people don't think, how shall I spend this precious day off today? I know, I'll spend it in the waiting room at Clapham Junction. People go to Alton Towers to be at Alton Towers. People go to Clapham Junction to be somewhere else. It's a place of transition. Sometimes, if you're very lucky. It's a place of transition, just like the family. Just like the family. You know, sometimes this passage shocks people. Didn't Jesus love his mum? Didn't Jesus love his brothers? Didn't he honour them? No, that's not very good, is it? Well, of course he did, as later events showed. But he was also acknowledging here something very, very important. That as he grew up, his family was extending. That families are not static things. And that those who were seeking and doing God's will were also his family. And every healthy family, like Clapham Junction, is helping people go somewhere new. Become something new. Now, I mean, I've lived a pretty uneventful life. I mean, for me, a busy day is one in which I have to get out of bed. But even in my limited life, there have been a number of transitions. I mean, I was born into a specific family. I got married and had children, which introduced me to another family. because, of course, I acquired a whole new network of in-laws, etc. And then, amazingly, I've acquired one or two friends along the way who I regard as family. And I'm also part of a family of believers who mean a great deal to me. Who are my mum, dad, brothers, sisters? They are people I love very much. But my family has extended quite a long way since the days when I lay in the cot and I knew only them as my security. And see, happy families are places which allow those transitions. Families are letting go sort of places. Is that your family? A sort of a letting go sort of place. Helping people to go somewhere new, become something new. See, which perhaps explains why some families are very unhappy places. Because there are families that do not encourage transition, but encourage stagnation. They are, in fact, prisons. There are lots of families that are prisons, emotional and psychological, if not physical. They don't allow people to grow or to change. And prisons really give only two options: submit or escape. And I meet adults who are doing both. Submitting limply to this powerful emotional and psychological prison, or just escaping and having nothing more to do with it. And really, neither of those options is ultimately very satisfying. But the fact is that there are some families which is like almost in a time warp. Time has stood still. And at its soft end, of course, that's harmless enough. You know, like the mum who can't accept the fact that her 43-year-old high-powered son, who's head of the second largest secondary school in the country, you know, is eating properly. And so, you know, she's always giving him scarves and woolly things for his ears to keep warm. Well, I mean, you know, that's okay. That's the soft end of this. But the hard, destructive end of this is when parents cannot cope with children growing up and taking decisions for themselves. Because parents cannot relinquish control. They cannot accept that things have changed. It's an old joke. Woman comes along and says to this person, Henry, when I last saw you, you were so tall. And now you're so short. And Henry, when I last saw you, you were so fat. And now you're so thin. And Henry, when I last saw you, you had blonde hair. Well, now you've got dark hair. And the person says, my name's not Henry. It's John. And she says, Henry, you've changed your name. And that's just a joke about someone who will not change the way they look at things, whatever the evidence. Whatever the evidence. And families can be like that. There's like a sort of a fixed picture mentality, not a fluid picture. People aren't encouraged to grow. So this passage that we're thinking about now, families as transition, it sometimes shocks people. You know, didn't Jesus love his mum? Didn't Jesus love his brothers? Well, of course he did. But he's acknowledging that as he grew up, his family was extending, and that families are not static things, and that those who are seeking and doing God's will were also his family. And every healthy family like Clapham Junction is helping people go somewhere new and become something new. I wonder if that's your experience. Families as transition. And finally, families as support. And here we have a look at that those very moving verses from John 19, 25-27. A scene from the crucifixion. And these are verses which flow very readily from our last heading. Because in this incredibly moving scene, Jesus is saying, the family as it was is over. Long live the new family. The family as it was, it's over. We can't go back there now. Long live the new family. And here's a family that is able to change, to adapt, that's secure enough to cope with transition, and therefore it can become a place of support. And that is my final heading. Families as support. And none of us need telling that it is a hard and nasty world out there. It may not be the torture and death of your son that confronts you, as it confronted Mary here, as it confronts many families in the world. But even so, the world may well be hard and nasty for other reasons for you. And what each of us desperately needs, what I desperately need, is a place of acceptance and support where I can just be, where I don't have to prove anything. There was a man called Robert Frost, and he said, home is the place that when you have to go there, they have to let you in. Home is the place that when you have to go there, they have to let you in. And I like that. So, you know, if you ask me, well, what is a home? Or what is a family? I would say it's the place or the people that when you have to go there, they have to let you in. In other words, it's a place or people that are always there for you. They're committed to being there for you with no other agenda than your support. Do you have that? You may have found it in childhood and never lost it. And if you have, you have a precious gift. You may have found it in marriage. And if you have, you have a very precious gift. You may have found it in friendship. I think quite a few of us find it in friendship. I was talking to someone the other day, and I was just listening to him talk, and I said, it sounds to me like your family, really, are your friends. And he says, yes, they were. Yes, they are. He says, really, my family, my friends, there's just too much disintegration in my original family. There's no support there. I wonder where you find your support. Marriage, parents, friendship, perhaps in the Christian community. You may have found it in all of those or none of those. Perhaps you find it in your fellowship group. A lot of people here involved in fellowship groups. I can imagine Jesus hanging on the cross and saying to his frightened disciples, you're a family now. You're a fellowship group. Look after each other. It might seem like you're on your own now, but you're not, because you've got each other. So look after each other. Because here from the cross, Jesus creates a new family for two people who are very dear to him, because they need support. They desperately need support. And that is interesting, because you too are very dear to Jesus. And you too desperately need support, because no one is an island. And so I wonder what Jesus would say to you now. If you look down at the cross, and he looked at you as he looked at John and Mary, what would he say to you about your need of a family? Your treatment by your family? Your treatment of your family? What would Jesus say to you? And how would you answer? Families as history, family as transition, and family as support. In the last couple of minutes, I'd like us to stay at the foot of the cross and listen to some different words. Words which are perhaps the most hopeful words ever spoken in relation to family life. And they are Jesus' words, and they are these. Forgive them, Father, because they don't know what they're doing. Forgive them, Father, because they don't know what they're doing. Because families remind us, perhaps like nothing else, that we are all victims of victims. It's self-evident. In many ways, my mum and dad could only give me what they'd been given themselves. And so could yours. So, although it's sometimes very, very hard, there can be no bitterness, and there can be no anger, and there can be no grudge in our soul lurking. For if you do perceive yourself to have been a victim of your family, you can be fairly sure that your oppressors were also victims. And perhaps that's why Jesus said these words, "Forgive them, Father, they don't know what they're doing." Well, you see, someone had to break the vicious circle of victim, hurting, victim, hurting, victim. And so the victim here turns to his oppressors and he says, "I forgive you." And suddenly the impossibly vicious and impossibly circular vicious circle is broken. And we breathe deeply because somehow our families, in all their complexities and irregularities, somehow our families seem altogether more hopeful places. We can forgive others. They can forgive us. Imagine if that were true. Because it is. And so this very brief and inadequate journey is over. We've considered some of the problems talking about happy families. We've glanced at three family snapshots in the life of Jesus. And we've closed with some words of hope. Forget what has seemed like nonsense to you. But what has been helpful? What has been helpful? Take into your prayers and let the real work begin.